Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am Gregory Kamichuk, and I am a full-time writer and illustrator, though I loathe the term content creator. If you're listening to this podcast, here's some free content. I'm joined by Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork. He is my long-suffering co-host. Producer Dan Vadaban Kerr has gone away on a secret mission today. And in his stead, the man of many hats, Lyndon Radchenka, is here with us today. Hello, Lyndon.
Hello. I'm sitting with producer Dan's headphones on, trying to make sure that all the levels are correct.
So any problems with the podcast are Lyndon's.
We know who to blame.
That's right. This is an essential part. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, you, dear listener, should know that Justin came into the studio today saying, I have an idea for today's episode. And when we said, what is it? He said, save it for the podcast. So I am now going to hand the reins, the control, the crown, if you will. Although we can all admit that the monarchy is an outmoded model for rulership. Take it away, Justin.
So recently, about 2 weeks ago now, I had my very first boxing match. I've been boxing at Pan Am Club since I started my own company. It was when I started Chasing Artwork, Pan Am Boxing was in the basement of the building that I started my company in. And so I saw sweaty boxers always coming up and down the stairs, and I'm sitting at a desk all day, so I decided, like, that is perfect, and it's super accessible, so I'm going to start boxing.
Same building, same stairwell.
Yeah, it was sweaty boxers with medicine balls running up and down the stairs every time I went in and out of work, and it was either about to, like, I had to get really annoyed at them or join them.
For the dear listener, a medicine ball is a type of exercise equipment, in case you had the wrong visual there.
It's a 20-pound leather ball that you use to...
They were not convalescing.
Anyway, so when I started going, I could only do like one class a week. And this is all leading into something artwork related. I'm just meandering my way there, right? So I could go like once a week, and that was about all I could take, because it's a pretty strenuous workout. You're doing a lot of different things. It's a lot of new concepts all at once. You have to learn a lot, and it takes a while to pick up on it. But
forging
like,
the mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm. But like anything, the more you practice, the better you get, which is always, I find that very comforting. When you ever find something that you kind of suck at, it's only because you haven't put the hours in, right? You can get great at anything. You just have to want to put hours into it. And if you put hundreds of hours into it, you can get really good at something. Put thousands of hours into it, you can make a living at it. So the end of last year, around New Year's, I've been boxing for a while now. I assist some classes as well, so I teach other people how to box. The only thing I really hadn't done was get in the ring and actually have a fight. And
You've been doing sparring for
years.
I've
been doing sparring, but I've been doing light sparring. So you're basically playing tag. Nobody's getting knocked out. Nobody's getting really hurt. We have mouth guards. We have headgear. We have really puffy gloves. So, like, it's nearly impossible to knock somebody out in that situation. And we're not trying even. It's all pretty light. The next step up from that is the fight team. And that is you're getting competitive and you are ready to get into the ring and start building yourself a record and maybe going towards something or other. Lyndon.
Do you sign up for that, or is it invite only?
They have to see you at the gym for a while before they let you on the rec team. And then if you're on the rec team for a while, you can approach one of the head coaches and say, I want to join fight team. And they will basically size you up and let you know if you're ready or not. Because
for
if you're
comics
not...
comics people, dear listeners, those of you who've joined the podcast for comics-related content, students at Xavier Academy for gifted students, when the Sentinels attack and one of the students really acquits themselves well, Xavier will say, oh, you should be on the X-Men,
mm-hmm.
right? They see them in action and you get invited to the fight team.
Yeah.
Right? So
you get invited to the X-Men. Go on. Go ahead.
You're not invited. You have to want to do it. Yeah, they're not going to ask you. You have to want it because
it is volunteer only.
It's volunteer
only.
Too, yeah,
just so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's extracurricular.
So Pan Am had a fight coming up, and something else that you can do if you're not on the fight team, but you're in rec sparring, you can do what's called an exhibition fight. And an exhibition fight is usually you're fighting somebody from within your gym, because you're never fighting somebody from the same gym. You're fighting somebody from another gym in the city, from Ontario, from Brandon, from another province. People fly in, you fight a different gym, and that's how you kind of climb the ranks. You don't fight somebody from your same gym. It just doesn't hold the same weight. But exhibition is basically like a crowd warm-up event. And so I put my name in for one of those. So I've been going to the gym long enough that they know that I know what I'm doing. Another guy from the gym who's also been there for a while knows what he's doing. So we were able to do an exhibition match. And this has been on my list of things to do, right? I've boxed for a while. I teach boxing, but I've never had a fight. I don't really want like a real, real fight. So this was like the perfect like in-between. And so I got to do it. I got to have my fight. And again, it's exhibition. So I'm friends with the guy I'm fighting. And I'm not really trying to kill him, right? We're still trying to hit each other pretty
show,
hard.
Yeah.
Put on a good show.
But the kid gloves are off.
But the kid gloves are
off. I'm using the right metaphor.
And there
now.
Was a moment. So leading up to the fight, I watched the Rocky movies because they all just dropped on Amazon Prime. So this was like my training, was I watched the Rocky movies.
Oh my gosh.
And in the middle of my fight, there was one point where I had Dave up against the ropes and I was going on the inside. I was hitting him in the body, hitting him in the head. And then I backed away to give him a break because that's what I do in sparring. It's friendly. It's rec sparring. We're all friends. We're not trying to kill each other. So in the middle of my actual legit fight now.
And I noticed it. I watched the fight and I noticed you back off.
And as soon as I backed off, I knew that I was not, I shouldn't have done
that. That is a mistake.
I
also saw this fight. We'll put a link in the show notes so you too can watch this fight.
But again, it's an exhibition. Even if one of us had rocked each other hard enough, they would have just stopped it because it's not supposed to be that kind of fight.
Glover, Rocky, you know the rules. I want a good, clean fight. When I tell you to break, I want you to step back out my command and break. Now go back to the corner and come out fighting at the bell.
Dead meat.
But the fight ended. We hugged it out at the end. We both had a great time. Really happy that I did it. I don't know if I need to do it again. And then, so then I was the first fight to happen, and then I got to watch the others. And I got to watch these young, hungry fighters who were trying to kill their opponents.
Exhibitions, or these were actual
matches?
Now
they were real fights. Okay. After us, it was just real fights. And people that were just, bloody and broken by the end and giving it their all. And in Rocky III, when he fights...
Apollo Creed, isn't it?
No. Rocky III is the
robot.
A-team guy.
Mr. T.
I pity the fool. Yeah.
B.A. Baracus.
Right. So the whole thing in that film, and here's where I'm bringing it back to art. We're getting there.
Okay.
Is Rocky doesn't have his hunger anymore. He doesn't have his fight. He doesn't want it. He's been coasting. He's been comfortable. He has nothing to prove anymore. So there's no motivation there. And it definitely... The stakes are different.
Yeah.
And so when I was in the ring with Dave, I think there was a bit of that. I didn't want to kill the opponent. I didn't have anything to really prove. I was just there just to do it. And that's why I let him off the ropes in the middle. And that's why we weren't, trying to kill each other the whole time. And I wanted to bring this back to art. Because Gregory, you and I are in a position where... I don't know if we're as hungry anymore as we used to be. And now we have Lyndon in the studio who's starting out.
He's definitely got
and
the hunger.
And very hungry.
Yeah.
So I wanted to tie this back to, do you think you're still hungry?
Interesting. So in the fight. So So I've been thinking about this a fair amount because it's been floating around the interwebs for a while, but people often carve up David Bowie's long explanations in these little bite-sized pieces, which takes them very much out of context. He's quotable, but you miss a lot of what he's actually speaking about if you just take the little piece. But one of the recent quotables was this idea of, should an artist play to the galley, like play to the gallery, like everyone who is there watching, should he try to make them happy, or are they doing it for themselves? And his sort of summation of this, which I think I agree with, is that when you're young, you're trying to make a name for yourself, you're trying to be heard, you're trying to be felt, you just want anyone ever to be affected by the thing that you're affected by. You're like, you sit down to make work, you feel this part of yourself come alive, you wish it would connect to other people.
You want people to go through that same experience you want you people go through.
Yeah, you want, you know, and any way you can make them or get them or reach them or feel like they're feeling something because of you and your efforts is enough. It's enough validation. But as you age and have different experiences and different, you know, not to put too dour a point on it, but we were talking to Lyndon about this. I said, you know, you'll be willing to put a certain amount of your effort into projects that you don't, that aren't about you, and they aren't for you, and they aren't about your artistic integrity when you're young. But once enough of your friend, you've sat at the funeral of enough of your friends, you start wondering what it's about, and you start then to have a different point of view on why you're making it, right? Other people's opinions suddenly mean almost nothing for the in the pursuit of that essential idea, that essential dream. Like, you know, we've been joking about all the new comics that are in the studio. I've been a big proponent of the graphic novel format for a long time because technology meant that the only way for an independent creator producer to get work to people was in single servings. So get the whole book, get it made, take it to people. So I'd been avoiding or eschewing the idea of floppy issues of comics because those individual issues would be hard to chase down. They're hard to get distributed. The price point is so hard to maintain a living wage of. But now technology has caught up to the point where I can order 100 at a time of something that I used to have to order 5,000 at a time to get the same price point. So I'm able to now zero in on something that feels more like the reason I started and less like the reason, unless I'm able to make choices more based on my artistic desires now than I've ever been able to. It's purer now than it used to be.
But are you still waking up at 5 a.m, drinking a glass of eggs and running up those steps?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I still do. My wife thinks I'm insane because I'll, but I mean, I don't wake up at 5 a.m, but I stay up till 5 a.m. Right. And she'll say, why? What was that for? It's like, I just had to make it. I just had to.
No. And I'm going to interject here a little bit.
Tell me what my wife said.
When was the last time you got up to illustrate something you didn't like?
To illustrate something I didn't
and now,
like?
The reason that I ask about this is because when we talk about hunger, at least in my mind, it's the drive to do and achieve something that I haven't already done. And I was at physio a few weeks ago because I had injured my shoulder playing soccer, and my physiotherapist was telling me about a trainer that he once had who, in their baseline assessment, they gave you a series of increasingly difficult exercises to do, and you did them all, and they sort of assessed where your baseline fitness was, and then they made you repeat the ones that you did the most poorly.
Mm.
Not because... Because the idea was that you don't need to keep exercising the thing that you're already good at.
Right.
You exercise the thing that you're bad at, and that makes you more well-rounded going forward. And so when I think about being hungry for more work, it's the idea of doing something new and facing a new challenge. And so the hunger isn't necessarily just keep doing what you've always done, which is get up in the middle of the night. But how often do you get up to do something that challenges you?
Often, I think. I still am challenged because I switch channels all the time. I mean, you've been in the studio. You've seen me. It's like from the outward perspective, it seems like, oh, there's all of these projects and it's all according to a plan. On the inward side of the studio, you see that it's needing a challenge. I can already produce 100 pages like this. So I'm going to try a different art style. I'm going to try a different way to use the lines. I'm going to try a different way to tell the story. And commercialization is the last thing on my mind when I'm doing that. You've seen it. And once it exists, then I decide what to do with it. But iCollector is a good example of doing something that I knew I could already do. And while it was a challenge as a collaborative effort, the output was not a challenge to me. And so the way I created a challenge was I added on top of that finishing a novel draft at the same time. So can I, in the same day, finish these pages for a publisher? Can I work with my collaborator? And on top of that, even though I'm tired, even though I'm a little worn out, even though I've put in my time, can I also get 2,000 words in? Right. So a couple extra reps. Because I feel like I need to in order to be more me.
I don't remember the exact... Jeff Goldblum has this great speech he did on like a late night show about wanting to be used up doing the thing you love is like the... It's like, what's a good life? And that's... It's not like strolling through laissez-faire. It's, I want to find something I'm passionate about and pour everything of myself into it until there's nothing left. That's what I want.
Yeah, that's a Johnny Cash thing too,
right? Is
that
a Johnny Cash?
Well, but he was saying, Johnny Cash was saying like when, if you say, I'm going to write a song, right? I'm going to write a song on Tuesday. No, he wouldn't be able to choose to write a song on Tuesday. But if he schedules a walk in the woods on Tuesday, he's pretty sure that Tuesday night he can write a song, that you've got to fill up before you can pour out, right? And so I definitely agree with that. Like, there are certain things that I have to do, that we don't talk about on the podcast that are part of my everyday life, that are how I fill up so that I can pour out.
What do you think of him being trained by Apollo Creed?
Apollo who? You talking about that old fool Apollo Creed? Shucks. One has been
just
teaching
keep
another.
Talking, pal.
That's all Apollo been
keep
doing,
talking.
Been running off at the mouth lately. And when I see him, I'm going to close it for him.
Justin,
as
man of leisure, while simultaneously one of the most hardest working people we know, when was the last time you challenged yourself and you did something that wasn't just, drawing the things that you enjoy drawing, but drawing something you don't enjoy drawing, but you know makes you a better artist?
Sub question. Do you think that's why you got in the ring?
I got in the ring. Yeah, I got in the ring because it was a hurdle I hadn't jumped. It was something I hadn't done yet. And if I didn't do it now, when am I going to do it, right?
Yeah.
It was just one of those, I don't want to look back 5 years from now when I was like at peak performance levels and...
Right.
Not have done it.
Yeah, because you're tipping into old and rickety now.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't keep going to the gym quite as often. Like, yeah, in the next couple of years, I'm sure I'll maybe taper off going as often as I'm going, so my skills won't be as honed, and then I won't be able to accomplish said thing. To answer your question, Lyndon, the posters I've been doing are, like, in the same vein of what I usually do, but I've been pushing them further and further and further. Each thing I've been doing has been taking, it's more detailed, it's more in-depth. It's, like, I think back to, like, 5-10 years ago, a piece would never take me more than, like, 2, maybe 3 days. And, like, this last piece that I worked on was probably, like, 2 solid weeks of work, right? It's 5 to 10 times the amount of effort. It's maybe not, like, drastic, like, it's the same medium, it's the same kind of subject matter, but it's so much more detailed and so much more story shoved into it than anything I would have done 5 years ago. So I feel like I'm maybe not challenging myself with something like unique and strange and different, but I am still honing and getting better at the one thing that I've been doing this whole time.
I'm still
specializing?
I'm in many ways... you know, it's almost, it almost borders on addiction, the newness feeling. Like, I need that challenge. We're talking about challenges. Like, when was the last time you challenged? Red Earth was a complete challenge. What do I know about, you know, being part of a play production that's going to project 3D images for actors to interact with? I knew zero before I started, right? What, love you to death. What do I know about putting on a musical event and hosting it? Zero, right? But I just want it to happen. And if you want things to happen, you have to do them. If you wait around for other people to do them, then you can attend, I suppose. But, you know, then you have to wait, and they come around every 5 years.
So is that like the addiction is like the, like saying yes to that project with no idea how you're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
It's the, that starting gun of like, okay, yes, I've undertaken this now. And now I have to figure out how it all works.
Yeah. If the multiverse is real, there's a Gregory Kmichuk somewhere who is a bank robber. Right. And he'll steal anything for you.
What's your calling card?
Right. In that universe, that's a good question, because I'd have to be far more selfish, and I'd be less tethered to reality as a result of a family, and I probably would have committed heinous acts of violence already. So I don't know what the calling card would probably a cup of teeth, right? That I would leave for the
where do you get the teeth
for the, well, exactly, right? And they're related to other crimes that multiverse me have committed, that even the FBI who are pursuing me didn't know I had done those crimes also.
The Tooth Fairy? Are they going to call you the Tooth
No.
Fairy?
No. Well, maybe. And I only say that because I know Jonathan Ball is listening, and he hates tooth-related imagery. So just imagine that, those teeth clinking in a china cup with a little gold foil, a little gold rim on it. No, but I just love the idea of figuring out how to pull off the heist. Publishing is so much about pulling off the heist. Right? But instead of stealing the treasure, you're making it and passing it out to people. Right? So
you've both asserted that you're both hungry.
I am hungry. There's so many things I still want to do that I know nothing about.
So this is the question, is what are you hungry for at this point in your professional careers?
New experiences is like the baseline. But creative, getting people to use their imaginations in the way they haven't and being present for it is one of my favorite things.
Like, making people wish they had done that instead of me. Because that's what I love to see. I love to see like a book or a piece of art and go like, I wish I had done that. Like, yeah, that is the coolest thing. I wish that was in my portfolio. I like that reaction of like, jealousy and awe is so great, like in a great way, not in a like.
So, because there's the expression, glamour cannot exist. This is Berger, John Berger. Glamour cannot exist unless envy is a social norm. So you're trying to increase envy in others and seem more glamorous?
Let's say inspiration instead of...
Inspiration instead
inspire
of
envy. Is such a fancy, nicer word than...
Than envy?
Than jealousy. Envy,
do you
yes.
think jealousy and envy and inspiration are
I think inspiration is a classy form of jealousy.
Is this conversation simply evidence that we all need therapy?
No.
Is this...
So be what?
I'm just wondering.
You want to temper this? Come on.
I don't.
No.
Maybe we should. Lyndon told me I flew too close to the sun the other day, so that makes sense.
Right, yeah. Well, Lyndon, you're on the podcast. Let's turn this around on you now, finally. What are you hungry for?
Well, we should describe the hunger we've seen, and then you can tell us from the outside in whether or not it's accurate.
Okay, as long as the certain, you know, certain events or we names are withheld to protect the innocent.
We will leave names out to protect the innocent. So I'll talk generally then. That the hunger I see is that is less to do. When you first started, it was more to do with proving your craft. Can I write? Am I a writer? When people read it, do they say, oh, I've felt something? That's the art of writing. I've been transported. You wanted that. You pushed hard to work on your craft, put in tons of time and energy to put teams together to see if you had the stuff. And now that the audience has started to respond to the stuff, it's no longer, can I do it? But how will I do it? And so what are the ideas that I'm going to try out now? You're in experimental phase, not just can I, but now what should I do with it?
So I would say that it feels like right now, how will I do it is not just an experimental phase, but how can I recognize and work within the systems that already exist to amplify the things that I want to do. The idea of...
one for them, one for me.
Well, one for both of us. Which is the what is the one for both of us project? Mm-hmm. How can I navigate, you know, the commercial or the mainstream or the more publicly accessible ways of distribution or accessing ideas or making things while also making the things that I want to make? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I'll put a finer point on it for the dear listener. What that might mean or could mean is, in comics specifically, one of the ways that you can do that is to work on licensed properties for larger companies who have the reach to the audience. You know, if you're writing Spider-Man, you're going to reach more people than if you're writing, you know, Dirk Dirksen and the Demons from Mars. You're just going to have that built-in audience. Then once you've reached that audience, to pivot is a way that a lot of independent comic creators have done, is to work for the big two and then start working on their own stuff.
Yeah, I think, and this is a conversation that I've had with Dr. Jonathan Ball at the same time, is that I think the hunger is to, control your own destiny. It's to not have to rely on a company or a single client, but to have built an audience and sort of control your own life and your own schedule and your own workflow. And the, as you said, the common way to do that, and something we joke about, is, you know, the dream is not necessarily to have worked for Marvel or to work for Marvel, but to have worked for Marvel.
Right.
Now, that said, that doesn't mean that I don't want to work for Marvel.
No, I don't hate Balboa, but I pity the fool, and I will destroy any man who tries to take what I got.
Working for Marvel or DC, that's a great scenario. What happens for, most people, I would say, 99% of artists and a lot of writers, is they work for, a video game company or a design studio, and their name never is anywhere associated with the final product.
Yeah.
You're working in a pipeline of a project,
right?
You're one of many artists, many writers, many designers, and you're doing little bits of a bigger whole.
And yeah, I've played a lot of Assassin's Creed games, but I couldn't tell you who wrote any of them.
No, well, and not just one person. There was a whole bunch of people associated with that, right? And so, especially working in video games, I saw so many talented artists, but at the end of the day, they can't put their name on any of the games that we produce because they're just a little bit of it.
In in anime, Ghost in the Shell is one I've talked about on the podcast. It's a favorite of mine, but it's credited to the Ghost in the Shell committee. So you're a member of the committee that writes and develops. You know, I always found that when I was first starting out such a peculiar credit, but here's a credit that I can name, right? And you don't know who's on that committee necessarily, but you could look it up, who was on the committee in that year, and there would be names associated to it. And that's one of the ways they manage it, to make sure that the team
is
credited.
Always rotating too,
right?
It's not the same set team every
time.
That's
right, yeah, because you're on the committee. Interesting. Yeah, so, yeah, it is better, comics, in that way, even if you are doing corporate stuff, because it's mandated that your name gets associated with it.
Well, and I think that... you know, where I'm at as an artist right now, or as a creative, is that I'm comfortable taking the boundaries or the direction that licensed work would give me, and
because it's a challenge,
and it's a challenge,
it's a limitation,
but it's also a fun. I think that a lot of the aspects that go into the commercial or mainstream or licensed comics, those are elements of storytelling that I enjoy playing with. They're the sorts of things that I enjoy doing in my own creator-owned work. I'm not necessarily a creator that needs to have the weirdest project on my table or on my plate.
He was looking right at me when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt seen, actually.
But this is what I'm saying is, so the challenge of working on a licensed project is something in my current creative career that I, you know, would welcome with open arms.
It's kind of funny here because you're talking about, like, you know, when was the last time you were challenged? Like, what kind of, like, when I think of that, I think of, like, trying something, like, drastically different than what we normally do. But we're in the point of our careers now that nobody wants us to do drastically different mm-hmm. things. If I'm hiring you, Gregory, to do, like, a space horror comic, I want you to do what you're,
yeah,
what you
in
do
fact,
best.
The company that just hired me to do a project said, here's a book we got of yours that was creator-owned. Here's another book we have of yours that's creator-owned. We want the Venn diagram where these two overlap. That's what our project is like. Can you give us that?
Yeah. So, like, right? Linda, when you're talking about, like, client projects, like, taking you down this, like, new path, a lot of the times now, yeah, they don't want you to go down a different path because you're established with a style that's been successful, got your name
now,
out there.
Here's the difference.
So they don't want you
to... We're both visual artists.
Yeah.
And Lyndon is a writer.
It's true.
So he can hitch his star up to a different digital artist.
To a degree, like, but if he establishes himself as, like, a great writer of kids' books.
Right.
Are people going to be wanting to hire him to do a sci-fi
yes,
adventure?
Actually, yeah. I was just listening to a podcast with Matt Rosenberg, who got his name by writing What's the Furthest Place from Here and Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, which are graphic novels that are that center themselves around children. And then he was hired at Marvel so that he could do Young X-Men. Like he,
oh,
they wanted
so
to
he's good at writing
all,
kids.
Well, they wanted to give him the kids' books.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't want the kids' books.
Oh.
He wanted to write The Punisher. But okay. He made his name shooing kids' books. So
we
yes,
want to
you
give you four kids and a wagon. And he's like, I want Punisher.
So you absolutely get typecast as a writer, or shoehorned yeah. into a certain mm-hmm. writer. But something that I wanted to add to what you were saying about your established styles is that Gregory and I have recently been talking about working on a project together, but elements of that project are things that Gregory's never illustrated before.
Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge. So, like, one of the places where
so
I
like
find
something happy?
Well, not happy, but so, okay, so they're making fun of me. So for the dear listener's sake, I'll give you the context of why they are mean, but also accurate. In much of my day-to-day life, I'm a pretty happy guy, and so I find one of the ways to maintain that is to put all the macabre thoughts and terrible things onto the page for someone else as a transmutation into fantasy. The bad stuff in the world gets turned into a metaphorical or literal monsters on the page.
Blood-curdling images.
Yeah, my blood-curdling imagery. And then it's excised from myself. I rarely will challenge or allow myself to be overly challenged by nuanced performance is how you'd think about it if it was film. In film, a nuanced performance is like the actor changes their eyebrow or changes a slight shift in their body language and you're like, oh, they're lying, even though what they're saying is true, right? Like, you can accomplish that in illustration, but it takes an enormous amount of empathy, effort, and desire. And so I usually avoid it. Because it's an enormous amount of work for very little payoff on the page for me for the kinds of stories I want to write. But it's always been this area where if I really want to get good, I should probably be good at that too. And to speak to what you're saying, Justin, is you build up a certain amount of momentum and then you don't have time to develop your... Or to work on your inadequacies.
Yeah, if you want to be a good boxer, you should box. You shouldn't be playing hockey and boxing and rowing. Like,
yeah.
If you really want to make your name as a boxer, you probably shouldn't be playing hockey three times a week as well.
Although it'd probably be good for your cardio.
I mean, it probably would be.
Yeah.
But also you hear about the value of multi-sport athletes.
Yeah.
Not just being just a hockey player.
Yeah, so I believe in that. Like, switching around. That's why. So when I want to get into the human drama, I write a novel. I don't draw the novel because I find for me I'm better able to articulate what I'm trying to demonstrate through prose that way. So that's where I'll put that efforts. But Lyndon Lyndon and I came up with an idea for a project that I really like, but the only way to make it work as conceived is for me to do some heavy lifting, as you put it earlier, work on the exercises that I'm bad at until they're strong enough, you know, to lift the weight of that story. And this would be, I also usually avoid ensemble casts in the comics that I work on because is a lot more illustration efforts. This is a good point to, a good moment to give a shout out to Scott Henderson, who's working on a secret project for us, which we cannot name yet, but I can tell you this, it's ensemble cast, and nobody can draw better in my life that I have ever worked with or sat near than Scott Henderson to bring each individual character to complete life on the page, even if they're only there for two or three panels. Like, I can't get over how he does it. And so it's really put a spotlight on that part of me that avoids it. Like, he leans in to what I avoid. And so it's made me, as a creative person, be like, okay, you can do it, Greg. You can do it. He's inspired. So this is where I felt a bit of jealousy. I felt a little bit of envy.
Jealousy and envy are not, like, they're there, but they're such dirty words, I find. Like,
they are.
It's not the right...
So inspiration is what you're getting at. So I was inspired by Scott's seemingly effortless ability to do this, which I know, Scott, if you're listening, I know how long you've been working at this. I don't mean to denigrate your efforts. Just when I see you do it now, it's like a magician doing a card trick. It just, you make it look easy, right? So I want to be able to feel the
ease. And you know how to do that same card trick, you just fumble your
way. I just fumble it every time. Yeah, I just fumble it, or I hide it, or I cover it with a tablecloth. Yeah, or
pan to another trick.
Yeah, just like, exactly. Yeah. So,
flash bomb.
Yeah,
flash. Was this your card?
Yeah. Bunch of pennies rain from the ceiling, and then I run away.
He's just another fighter.
No, he ain't just another fighter. This guy is a wrecking machine, and he's hungry. Hell, you ain't been hungry since you won that belt.
So this project that Lynn is talking about would require me to do that heavy lifting. And so in order to make it viable as a project for the time and effort, I said, okay, well, at least half of it has to be like on an alien landscape with like no rules and random robots, machines, and monsters that show up at my whim. And so we constructed it so that I would have this room to just do what's easy, so that I would have it as a reward after I did the hard pages.
You moved your sandbox to be right beside his sandbox.
Yeah, kind of.
So you can jump back into your comfortable sandbox every once in a while.
And so maybe what I'm doing there is boring some of that hunger, right? Because also I know just from watching you work on your own drafts and being in a number of 13 Horrors with you, where you get frustrated is when a story could have a deeper human connection and we put plot in the place of character. That's when you're like, hey guys, just wait. There's a moment here. We're just rushing. And so this gives us an ability to put character in the place of plot, or character becomes the plot, really.
Which you don't do as much of in your illustration.
That's right.
So, yeah, perfect. Yeah.
So
okay,
gives me... So that's that hunger, there's you know, hunger. I'm... But it's also fear, right? Like you got into that ring the first time. You told us, I asked you how the fight went, and hopefully I'm not telling too many tales out of school, but your summation was that a good part of it you didn't even remember happening because adrenaline took over for the first bit, and it wasn't until like round three where you're like, okay, I'm having fun now. I wish it could go another three rounds because now I'm present as a...
And like that makes me think of like my first Comic-Con. Like it was such a rush of like input and inspiration and jealousy and envy. And like by the time it was over, I was just like vibrating with, oh God, I need to do this again and I need to do it better.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It lights the fire. Like after my first fight, the fire was not ignited. I think like I did what I wanted to do. I don't want to continue to get smacked in the head. I'm not nearly as hungry as those other guys.
Right.
But how hungry those other young guys were that were trying to kill their opponent and win at any cost, that's what I was after my first Comic-Con. That's how I knew I was in the right ring with my art.
Yeah, it's interesting because many of my film projects, many of my theater projects, the music stuff that I've been doing, and some of the video game stuff that we're doing on the side, They're exhibition matches for me.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
You're there. You're doing a good job, but you don't. You're not trying to,
you know,
kill.
I don't
your
mind
way
getting
through.
Hit in the head a couple of times.
Yeah. Your eggs aren't in that basket.
But I don't want to. Yeah. And I had a moment, you know, and maybe I'll leave some of the details out, but for one of those projects where we got some real strong recognition, and as an outsider, the jealousy and sort of silent rage that was leveled at me that I could feel, like, how dare you come into our playground and win the game and then leave?
Sorry, this was like a show you did?
Well,
or?
Yeah, we'll just leave it. I'll just be as vague as possible.
Okay.
But like
a project that he worked on.
A project we worked on that got some accolades.
Okay.
But we had come out.
You came into a different arena than you're used to being seen.
Yeah, like,
and
imagine
laid
if
waste
I had come to your,
and then waltzed away.
Imagine if I had come. If they were like, surprise, your exhibition is against Gregory. And you're like, oh, well, he doesn't box. And I knocked you out.
Yeah, right.
How angry you would have been.
Right, yeah.
Right? It was like that kind of thing. But it was a combination of luck and team that allowed us to accomplish that. And that's what we said. We didn't say, like, we're the greatest.
It would have been like if McGregor had beaten Mayweather in the boxing fight.
Mm, right. He's not a boxer, for those of you who don't watch. He's a MMA fighter, so he was kind of stepping outside his comfort zone.
For money.
So for money.
I do have a question to you both now. Talking about the topic of hunger, and you know, until recently, Jonathan and I were not in the studio space. It was just the two of you working together all the time. And when I was promoting my Laundryman Kickstarter recently, we often got asked some very similar questions, and one of them was, what is your advice for creatives? And one of the things that I always tried to mention was, if you want to grow as a creative, you need to surround yourself by other people who are doing the things that you want to be doing. I just wondered if the two of you could take a moment to reflect on how your hunger was affected when you first started working closely together and you were watching one another.
Oh, my gosh.
Cool.
And then, yeah, it was crazy.
And then in the time, how it changed over time as you got used to that. And then if it has changed at all, being surrounded by now more creative people in your space.
I don't know. I think it's kept it strong because Justin's always got something new.
We'll start at the beginning.
Well, right when I moved in, right? Here is a guy who's 10 years younger, right? And given it his absolute all. And I come in some regards with just pure hours, with one hand tied behind my back, because as a father and as a husband,
got that family weighing
you, right?
Down,
you got all that kind of stuff. So they're just, you can't put in the time. And I had come out of a season of my life where I would work all night on graphic novels and all day at the day job. And so I was taking my foot off the gas a little because I only had one day job now. But then I came into a studio with a guy who has, it's like there were two gas pedals and he had both feet on one on each of them. And so it really reminded me when I first got there that I can't compare, that comparison is the thief of joy. And I've said on other episodes of this and in person and in other places and to Justin himself that I'm happy to be beside him at a show or happy to be now. At the beginning, it was harder to compare yourself. And I think the same for Justin. You see certain successes in like traditional book publishing and certain accolades and you say, oh, well, you know, I'm not being recognized in that way. But we both had arenas that we were excelling at that were parallel but not in competition. And once we realized that, at least for me, I shouldn't say we, once I realized that if I just keep the pace without trying to match the output, it's great, right? There was probably a 6-month window where I had to like have like a talk with Gregory to be like, are you trying to compare yourself too much to someone else's workflow instead of the pace of the workflow? Because I can keep the pace, no problem. But trying to do the constituent parts the same way, that was a fool's errand. And also you compare yourself in certain ways and then it makes you wonder, should I have done a different thing or what is it? And then that takes you away from joy. And was like, as long as I'm making what I want to make at the same pace that he's making what he wants to make, what we do with it after, who cares? Like, that's not why we're here. We're here to make art.
Yeah, remember a moment early on when I was like, I had a year calendar spread out, and I was going over with Gregory the 38 events that I wanted to do. And which one are you coming with me to? Like, share a hotel this one, or we could fly together here? And I remember feeling like a little bit guilty as I was laying it all out, because I was like, I shouldn't be taking you away from your family this much. Like, this was too much for me as like a...
Yeah, he was doing 38 and I did 20, 25, and that was still a lot.
Yeah.
That's half the year.
There's only 52 weeks.
Yeah, 52 weeks of the year, and half of them I was on there. But that was at the beginning when I left teaching as a full-time pursuit. I still do curriculum, advising and stuff like that. But when I left it as a full-time pursuit, Tara, my wife, life partner, mother of my children, said, if you're going to leave your job, I accept that there will be a building season.
Yeah, there was a phase there where you kind of have to just...
And the opportunity cost for not being at shows was too high. And so when you go to shows, you meet editors, you're sharpening against other people. That world of competition does make you a little bit envious, does make you a little bit over-hungry, does make you a little lean, lone wolf, starving on the side of the path. And so you're willing to risk things a little bit. Now I don't have to risk as often to get the things I'm after. And I'm out of that season of the hunt, right? So it's a little bit more fallow now for me, at least for this year. And, it cost the world a lot, but I really appreciated having a couple of years where we were told no, unequivocally.
Stay home and make stuff.
Stay home and make stuff, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And so that really, it helped. It helped the work-life balance.
I don't believe in myself no more. Don't you understand? What if I don't believe? That's it. He's finished. It's over. That's it.
Justin, has your hunger changed in the years that you had a studio mate?
I think if we're looking, going back to the multiple dimensions, alternate realities, alternate reality Justin, who wasn't sharing a studio with Gregory, who isn't here right now, definitely hasn't put out as much. I think, the fact that every time I'm not at the studio, there's a good chance that Gregory's probably here getting stuff
texting
done.
Texting him images of what I'm working on.
Right, yeah.
We do that to each other. Yeah, for the dear listener, we have a text thread which is basically like at weird hours of the day, here's what I'm making. And often it is an exchange. Like Justin will chime in on, if I send him an image, he'll be like, oh, add more of this, touch the color there, move that over there. Like it's... We have an unspoken sort of text thread, which is like unsolicited comments are welcome in this thread. And so whenever I'm like, I wonder if this is any good, I'll just send it to Justin. And it might be a couple hours later, but there'll be a piece and vice versa. There'll be this like pushback where, because we have different tools, different ways of showing improving. And so we try, to use it on.
I also felt like in Seattle, I went out with a couple American friends that I haven't seen in a while, and it kind of struck me that everybody who was at the... We all went out for supper, we were sitting there, and everybody at that table has the same kind of, like, borderline workaholic tendencies. Like, we're all constantly outputting. And there was nobody at that table who was...
Normal.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny, like without really meaning to, that's the kind of people that I seek out and try to surround myself with are the people who are constantly outputting and trying to do different things and trying to improve upon their craft. And I think it's important.
You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with, I think turns out to be true, whether you like it or not. And so, and I mean, that was definitely true of my delinquent years. Thank goodness there were no cell phones then, right, to record any of those delinquent events. But I was with a group of people who were up for anything at all hours of the night, where the notion of law was ephemeral, flimsy at best.
More of an idea.
More of an idea than a structure to follow. Mm. And man. I'm thrilled to have survived that period of my life.
And finally, one more paraphrased question for the listener who may be envious of you both.
Oh my God, don't be.
One of the things that, again, another question that we were asked a lot, and I see a lot online, is how do you find someone? And so for two guys that found each other in the current age, how would you recommend people who
we looked at each other
want to find other people to keep
convention.
Them accountable and to keep them hungry? Where do you go? What do? What do you say?
You gave me advice once, Gregory, I think when I was single, and you were like, if you want to meet people, you just need to go to that same place and like start to be known there, start to get comfortable there, start to be recognized there, then you start meeting people and blah, 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 right?
Yeah, absolutely true. Like if you're a person that's looking for love or looking for connection or looking for a group, find a place where those people seem to be and go there all the time with no agenda.
Okay, so now I'm a creative.
Right? Same thing.
Comic-Cons,
go there all the time.
Art nights, drink and draws.
Yeah, with no agenda. Don't go there for you. Go there to give to the community. What can you do in that community? So, like, you know, the joke we were making is that if you're, you know, you're trying to find a person that you want to spend time with, go to a place where people that seem to fit that description congregate and be a regular there.
Mm-hmm.
But contribute to that community. You're a regular. You pay your tab on time. You tip properly. And the people who are there get to know you and realize that you're semi-decent. And then the entire room is your wingman when you're trying to.
Yeah, like we met in 2008. We weren't sharing a studio till like 2014.
That's right.
So right, like so 7-8 years of just seeing each other at events, slowly starting to get to know each other. But yeah. It wasn't until like a year or two leading up to like sharing a studio that we were, you know, friends.
Yeah.
It was just we were in the same.
And I think a good. In my case, a really good element to what you're talking about is finding that person. Justin and I are different enough in age that our personal circles are separate. And so we are spend enough time together at work that we don't have to spend time together outside of work, except in those key elements where our interests really overlap, like a horror movie in the middle of the night or something, right? You know, those kinds of elements. So it's not like you're spending all your time with that person because we have different lives. Like there's so much of his life outside of the studio that I am never a part of, don't know anything about. He has a whole different group of friends, right, that he goes and does stuff with, and vice versa. And that allows it not to, you know,
we don't get sick of each other.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. I was trying to be more eloquent, but
yeah,
basically,
no,
like you don't want to overstay your welcome in another person's psyche.
I think it's really healthy that at the end of our, usually at least once a year, we'll do like a 10-day road trip together. And
yes.
At the end, it's like, okay, I can't wait to like be rid of you for a while. And you'll agree, yes,
yeah.
Let's go not be around each other
yeah.
for a couple of days.
Yeah, I won't see you for a week. And he'll be like, okay,
perfect.
Great, perfect.
Thank God.
Right? But we can handle a week or 10 days completely overlapping without any problem because he's got all the stories to tell of his actual life outside of work, and so do I. And so that's what we'll talk about when we're on the road, is all the things we don't talk about when we're at work normally, you know?
Lyndon, has your work ethic changed since joining the studio?
Well, I mean, I've been chasing after the two of you for 5 years now, so being here and seeing how the sausage gets made is obviously very helpful.
A little disappointing?
No.
You probably. Wait, that's how
really?
You did it?
That's
oh my God.
It?
You just sent a cold email? That's all you did?
But let me use studio friend Zach Schuster as an example, who came to the studio for one day during Winnipeg Comic Con, tripled his daily output of work in that single day, and has been talking about wishing he had a studio space or being part of the studio space ever since.
He was so disgusted at the idea of moving to Winnipeg a week before, like, or yeah, the first time we talked to him, he's like, yeah, pff, never. Like, it was just such a weird idea. And then after spending a day in the studio, wasn't he looking at apartments?
By the end of the weekend, it could happen.
We'd love to have you, Zach. Yeah. What I loved about having Zach here is he is a traditional artist using, like, actually ink slinging, so pencil ink on artboard, He has all kinds of digital tools at his disposal also, which he uses to great effect. But watch it. We kept saying, hey, there's a real artist at the studio today, is how it felt to us. So, you know, the feeling was mutual.
So I think that just goes back to this idea that if you want to do something, one of the best or most direct paths to doing it is surrounding yourself with people that are doing it. And I think that that's the value of the studio, whether it's a, you know, communal studio or metaphorical studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just one of those things that it's been a great benefit to have in my life. So thank you both very much.
So it keeps you hungry, I think, is what that does, is when you see other people. And so absolutely. Justin's 10 years younger than I am. You're 10 years younger than Justin is.
No.
Yeah.
5 years? Were you 34?
36.
Oh, 6 years.
6 years. Okay, six well, almost years. 10. Almost 10. We'll just round up for
yeah,
the
looking
sake
across
of
the studio and seeing the gourmet meal that you are eating
right.
makes me hungry to have...
Have some of that.
Some
yeah.
of that. Yeah, or, I want that. I want yeah. that on my table.
And change is as good as a rest. You know, like I have, like in a real practical way, I've done lettering and typeface and all that kind of stuff in my comics for years. But here comes a person who's actually dedicated, has done the reps, put in their time to do a good job and learn the actual industry standards. And as a result, Lyndon lending his efforts to our projects, his lettering has elevated the entire affair. So you then it makes me want to do better,
mm-hmm.
right? And learn new skills. It's like if he can do that and I don't have to do that now, then I better do something else. So I better learn how to draw faces better.
Well, there you go. Be better.
Yeah, be better.
Just do better.
Yeah. So
more reps, more hours.
The best way to stay hungry is to stay with people who are doing things that, well, make you feel a little jealous. A little envious, but
mostly inspired,
right? And you have to be able to talk about what you're jealous about. We'll say, like, it's funny. If I land something, Justin will go, oh, that makes me so jealous. And
no,
then
I'll say, I hate you so much. This is like the biggest compliment I can give.
That's right, yeah.
If I hate you for doing that,
yeah,
it's but because I really wish I had done that, and good job.
And sometimes that feeling is wholly mutual, and it keeps us moving in the right direction. Well, dear listener, if you feel a touch of envy, a touch of sadness, a little bit of fear, and a whole lot of inspiration, you're probably on the right track. This is Gregory Kamichuk encouraging you to join the fight and make comics. This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by The Things We Make. If you want to support Gregory Kamichuk, you can go to gmbkamichuk.ca. And if you think Justin Curry is just all right, you can go to chasingartwork.com.